Arnold's crew was mostly farm boys, but they were scrappy and resilient. Here's what Arnold wrote to his commanding officer, General Philip Schuyler.
We are as well prepared for the enemy as our circumstances will allow. They will never have it in their power to surprise us. At 11 o'clock, they ran under the lee of Valcour.
Lake Champlain can be fickle. It was October, and the British had a strong wind behind them, and they flew right past Arnold and his hidden fleet. On board the ship Maria, British General Sir Guy Carleton did get a glimpse of them, but just a little late. The strong wind had caught the sails, making changing direction difficult and time-consuming. This was General Carleton's account.
We found the rebel fleet behind the island of Valcour, after we had, in this manner, got beyond the enemy. The wind, which had been favorable to bring us there, however, entirely prevented our being able to bring our whole force to engage them, as we had a narrow passage to work up, ship by ship, exposed to the fire of their whole line.
The strong southerly wind prevented the larger ships from participating in the battle, which left the fighting to about 20 gunboats. By noon, the fight was heating up.
At 12:30, the engagement became general and very warm. Some of the enemy ships and all their gondolas beat and rowed to within musket shot of us. They continued a very hot fire, with round and grape shot until 5:00, when they thought it proper to retire about 600 or 700 yards distance, and continued fire until dark. The Philadelphia,
that's one of Arnold's ships,
was hauled in so many places that she sank about an hour after the engagement was over. The whole killed and wounded amounted to about 60. We suffered much from want of seamen and gunners. I was obliged myself to put most of the guns on board the Congress.
That's the ship Arnold is commanding.
Which I believe I did with good execution.
Night fell, a great darkness. Arnold's armada was seriously battered. He consulted with the other captains and determined that their boats could slip past the British ships in the darkness of night.
It was thought prudent to return to Crown Point, every vessel's ammunition being 3/4 spent, and the enemy greatly superior to us in ships and men. At 7:00, the Trumbull got underway. The gondolas and small vessels followed, and the Congress in Washington brought up the rear. The enemy did not attempt to molest us.
So they got away?
The next morning, the cold wind from the north met the lake, which was still holding on to summer temperature. You can imagine, quite a fog developed. Carleton woke up, looked out through the fog. He was sure that the Americans were still there, but then he saw what looked like the shadow of a ship. He ordered fire and fire again, but the ship was indestructible. The cannons were doing nothing. The fog finally lifted, and Carleton and his men found themselves staring at a piece of a small island. So now they call it Carleton's Prize.
Carleton's Prize? Kind of funny, but not so much for him. Is that story true?
Yes, it is. Cannonballs have even been found on that island.
Oh.
We then anchored in a line opposite the rebels, within the distance of cannon shot, expecting in the morning to be able to engage them with our whole fleet. But to our great mortification, we perceived at daybreak that they had found means to escape us unobserved by any of our guard boats or cruisers, thus an opportunity of destroying the whole rebel naval force at one stroke was lost.
The Americans just slipped away.
On the whole, I think we have had a very fortunate escape, and have great reason to return our humble thanks to Almighty God for preserving and delivering so many of us from our more than savage enemies.
Did Carleton pursue them?
Carleton spent the rest of the day chasing the rebels. By the following morning, the rebel fleet was seriously battered, and the men weary. This left the opportunity for Carleton to catch up with Arnold about 20 miles up the lake at a place called Split Rock.
On October 13th, the wind sprung up fair and enabled us, after a long chase, to get up to the rebels. And in our second action, we have been much more successful.
Arnold tried to make his escape as he engaged in a running battle.
They kept up an incessant fire on us for about 5 glasses, with round and grape shot, which we returned as briskly.
That is about 2.5 hours of fire.
The sails, rigging, and hull of the Congress were shattered and torn to pieces. The first lieutenant and 3 men killed. When to prevent her falling into the enemy's hands, who had 7 sail around me, I ran her ashore in a small creek 10 miles from Crown Point. On the east side, when after saving our small arms, I set her on fire with four gondolas with whose crew I reached Crown Point through the woods that evening.
The east side? On the map, that's Vermont, right?
Yes. He burned his ships on the Vermont side. He was surrounded by seven British boats and did not want his boats to fall into enemy hands.
How did he get to Crown Point?
After setting the ships on fire on the Vermont side, he went through the woods to Chimney Point, opposite Crown Point, where he convinced the colonel in command to set fire to all the buildings surrounding the fort and continue to Ticonderoga about 15 miles by foot.
Why did he burn the buildings at Crown Point?
Arnold believed the fort to be indefensible against the wave of British troops. Crown Point had been a fort established by the British nearly 20 years before, so they knew this landscape and had planned on landing there. Arnold did not want his enemy to find any shelter because Crown Point was on the way to Ticonderoga, and that was the real prize for Carleton.
What is so special about Fort Ticonderoga?
Fort Ticonderoga was a legendary stronghold that controlled the passage between Lake Champlain and Lake George. But winter comes on early in the North Country. On October 20th, 1776, Carleton saw snow on the mountaintops and decided to head back to Canada and wait for spring to assault Ticonderoga.
Wait, he gave up? It was only October. They were winning. Arnold was on the retreat.
But to what they believed to be a pretty well-defended fort. And since Arnold burned all the buildings around Crown Point, there was no shelter to sustain the troops in the cold winter.
So who won the battle? Even though Carleton gave Arnold a thorough whooping, Arnold was at least successful in fending off the attack on Ticonderoga. I call Arnold the winner.
Marshall, guess who asked the same question?
Who?
Your dad. And I had the same reaction before him. And your great-grandpa said, "Son, the story isn't about American victory or British defeat in individual battles. It's a story about the land, the people, and the circumstances that they encounter."
I trust you, Grandpa. What happens next?
Hold on a sec. You gotta know a little more backstory. Carleton's second-in-command is not too happy. A Lieutenant General John Burgoyne originally had the orders to lead the campaign, but was unseated from his command by Carleton. When Burgoyne heard that Carleton was returning to Quebec for winter, he was furious that this campaign failed to maintain even a forward position on Lake Champlain.
"I cannot express my surprise nor concern at hearing, since the post has been judged untenable for want of season to cover the troops and fortify them, and that the whole is coming back. I think this step puts us in danger, besides conveying a bad impression to the public of losing the fruits of our summer's labor and certain victory."
Burgoyne was a troubled man. On top of losing his command, he also received news from back home that his wife had died. He was grieving for his wife, but at the same time burning with ambition and stewing on ways to rise to the top of the British military chain of command. So late that fall, he set sail for England to bury his wife and do some politicking. The Peru boat launch is a good spot to get a glimpse of where the action took place. We can even dip our toes in the waters of historic Lake Champlain.